Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Animal Advocates Radio Voices Carry for Animals number 308 shows and counting this evening. This is just wonderful for the animals because going on 7 years of Voices Carry for Animals at the end of June, and this is just great news, inspiring news, because we're going to keep going here, ladies and gentlemen. We're not going to give up. We are relentless and getting the animals better futures and improving their lives. They so well deserve, the ones our animal friends in need and distress, because they cannot speak out for themselves. They are defenseless, helpless, voiceless, and innocent, and most of all. So we have to all do our part and take that action to see any changes made. So I want to just go over a couple things before we get started here. Everybody that's new to listening tonight, welcome aboard. I hope you enjoy the show and keep spreading the word about it. And because the more action takers, the better, the faster the victories come. And all you returning listeners, can't thank you enough for all your utmost support. And keep coming back and keep spreading the word out there, because we have this animal army that's coming and doing their part, taking that action and making sure the animals get their rights granted, not ignored. Then we're doing our part. We cannot give up. We are relentless, and we want to see changes made, because that's what our goals are, hitting that big V word, victories. So just over a couple things. The show is coming live from the PPJ Gazette Online, www.ppjg.me. And a big shout out to Marty Oakley, who has proudly promotes it every Thursday on her website. And she is a producer and host for TS Radio Network. And she has some hot topic shows during the week, so please check them out if you can. Multitask, because I did a host on her show, 163 shows at the beginning on TS Radio Network. And I went on my own Animal Advocates Radio, and she helped me put it together. And a big thank you to her for, you know, taking the time and showing me how to do it and being a host and producer. My name is Debbie Dahmer. And everyone, like I said, welcome aboard. And, you know, we are the voices of the animals, and we must be heard. So all these shows are recorded live and archived on Blog Talk Radio. So if you ever want to go back to listen to any of the shows, you can listen to them from the PPJ Gazette Online. Go to the right-hand column under blog stats and search Voices Carry for Animals, or you can put my name in, Debbie Dahmer, D-A-H-M-E-R, and it will bring up all the links. Just wait a minute to download, and it will play. And on the left side of the screen, you can share 24/7 the social media icons, Facebook, Twitter, the crosses, all of them, WordPress, LinkedIn. I mean, this list is huge. So everyone could, you know, do your part and take that action. That is a foot in the right direction. And I'm going to bring my guest on. All these shows are, like I said, are archived live. So if you want to call in later on in the show, please try to refrain from any noises in the background, TVs, radios, conversations, and you're more than welcome to come on board. You can listen in live worldwide. And I'm going to give the number out. We've got a packed house. Thank you, everyone. Area code 310-982-4270. And that press 1, and that'll alert me that you want to speak on air. Any questions or comments for the guests? So, you know, just do your part and feel free to call in. You know, more voices for the animals, the better. And the faster the action will be taken. But I want to welcome back our guest for this evening, Wayne Pacelli. He is the president of Animal Wellness Action, and he's out there. He is a tough cookie. He is a strong voice out there, a strong leader, and he's doing everything, all the work he's doing. He's a true inspiration to humans and animals, and I want to welcome him back to the show again and again. I always welcome back Animal Wellness Action and all of them, because there's no limit on how many times you come on my show. You know, so if you want to be a guest, you just get a hold of me, Voices Carry for Animals at AOL.com, and give me a brief bio and any websites, Facebook pages, groups, petitions, websites, and we'll get together and schedule you on. Okay, but I want to go ahead and welcome him back. Hello, Wayne. How are you doing this evening?
Oh, it's a great pleasure to be with you, Debbie. Thank you so much for inviting me back on your outstanding show.
Oh, thank you for your inspiring words there. Thank you. That's very kind of you to say that. You know, I appreciate it. Yep, helping animals
You're totally committed to the animals, and you're so authentic in talking about the issues. I really value that about you.
Oh, thank you. That's awesome. And, you know, that's so inspiring me to keep me going, you know, because I don't want to give up. I want, you know, on this platform, we stand up for all the animals in need from every angle. And when, you know, whatever I can do, multitask, it's not the only thing I do with this radio platform. I also, you know, hooked up on four media sites, social media sites, Twitter, Facebook, Pinterest, and LinkedIn. So I'm really fast at what I do, getting the word out there. So it's so important, you know, to keep recruiting people in, you know, say, sign this petition or, you know, call your legislators. It's so very important, you know, so but I appreciate everything you do too. You're a strong voice out there in everything that you do. You know, real men, real women, and real children love animals because they're awesome. They deserve the attention that we're giving them, you know. They are. But you want to go ahead and refresh the audience. How you got started with Animal Wellness Action, and we're going to be talking about several topics tonight, so you can go ahead and in what order you want to bring them in, you go right ahead.
Well, Debbie, thank you. Let me just say broadly that, you know, I have cared about animals for my entire life. I was not aware when I was a kid about the range of exploitative activities that people engage in. All the callousness, all the greed, all the selfishness that's put on display in our relationship with animals. But I knew that we needed to be good to animals when I was a little kid. You know, I saw animals as different, but they were different in good ways. They had beautiful fur. They had alluring eyes. They ran fast. They were big. They were small. I mean, it's just an incredible diversity in the animal kingdom, and every animal has magic in him or her. So I just knew they had lives that mattered to them, that they want to live as much as we want to live. And the idea of hurting them, causing them pain and suffering for some selfish pleasure on our part, I thought was wrong from the very start. I was a little kid. I think most kids love animals because they're interesting and fascinating, and I had a real empathy for them. But it wasn't until, Debbie, I got to college that I really began to understand the scale of the exploitation, dogfighting and cockfighting, the trade in animals for their fur, factory farming, animal testing, trophy hunting, bullfighting. I thought, my God, how could we do all of these things to animals? And I decided as a college student to form an animal advocacy group at the end of my sophomore year. I decided I did not want to be a bystander. I wanted to do something about this. And I thought, well, we have moral codes in our society. We're to care for our neighbor, but we're also to care for a person across the planet, that we have principles of human rights that are based on an understanding of the individual's autonomy, bodily integrity. And I thought, my God, well, animals deserve that same consideration that we do. And the extreme exploitation on factory farms and killing elephants for their tusks as a trophy, killing animals for their fur to adorn ourselves, staging fights for titillation and gambling between dogs or between roosters. But these things are unconscionable. So I've been working really my entire adult life, Debbie, to combat these things. I've worked in Congress. I've led 35 or 40 statewide ballot initiatives. I've helped to pass more than 1,000 state statutes to help animals. I've negotiated agreements to get SeaWorld to stop breeding orcas, to get Walmart to embrace the five freedoms of farm animal welfare, to get Giorgio Armani to stop using fur. These are things to me that are the essence of our humanity. But a lot of these things change only because people push and prod and demand change respectfully but forcefully. And I have really tried to honor those principles throughout my entire life. And I'm so glad to be able to help to lead Animal Wellness Action and a separate organization called the Center for a Humane Economy. And I work closely with the Animal Wellness Foundation. And we are fighting for all animals, domesticated animals, whether they're dogs, cats, or farm animals, wild animals, whether they're, you know, little prairie dogs or they are elephants and any animal in between. And I just believe that we have duties and responsibilities to animals, that, again, that their lives are important to them. And if we are caring, incredibly smart, creative human beings, then we should be smart enough to figure this out, that we can lead our lives and they can, on the same planet, lead their lives without enduring any undue human-caused suffering. So that's really what I'm all about. And I know you are as well, Debbie. These are the kind of moral principles that animate you every day. And I'm so proud of you for fighting for these creatures also.
Hey, you're so truly welcome, because I'm not going to give up. I mean, I multitask, and whatever I can do, you know, hey, let's go for positivity in this world. And, you know, bring the negative into the positive. It can be done. And the more voices and action takers out there, the better. It takes teamwork all the way. You know, so everyone, you know, take that action to sit down and sign a petition. In fact, Wayne, I was on your website last night signing petitions, take action, and I got more to go. So, and I want to, you know, sign them and sharing them, you know, because it's all important. I looked at them, I was like, all these petitions are important. You know, I just don't want to sign one and leave the other ones. So that's a great website, a great Facebook pages, you know, and Twitter. And everyone, you know, visit, go by if you haven't already yet. Animal Wellness Action on Facebook. You know, press like, and you how you can help out on their website. Share it. Press that share button, because that like button does not serve any justice, right, Wayne? That thing just like, that's it. Poof. It doesn't get nowhere. But that share goes into the news feed, and other, you know, other ones see it. And maybe the first two won't do anything, but then the next three might. So that's how it goes viral. So whatever anybody can do out there, you know, do your part, because that's how we get changes made and that victories pop up. Then we could do the victory dance. You know, that's what our goals are. But go ahead, Wayne, if you want to start out with mink farming and COVID-19. Go right ahead.
Sure. Well, thank you, Debbie. You know, the fur industry has always been in the crosshairs of serious-minded animal welfare advocates. We don't need to kill animals for their fur. We have other fabrics that we can use to adorn ourselves, keep us warm when it's cold. And this is the height of gratuitous killing, to trap animals in the wild with steel-jawed leghorn traps or snares or conibear traps or deadfall traps, and then also to raise these animals on factory farms, wild animals like mink and foxes, killing them for their pelts. And we have gone through a trauma as a global community in the last year with COVID-19. Of course, the entire pandemic got its start in Wuhan, China, at a live wildlife market where people for profit were taking wild animals from their homes, from their families, putting them in cages, and then offering them up for sale to be butchered for human consumption, people eating wild animals, live wildlife markets. And all of the evidence points to this practice essentially creating a zoonotic disease circumstance where a disease jumped from a non-human animal, whether it was a mink or a civet cat or a pangolin or a bat or some combination of them, to a person. And in our system of global transportation, that virus then began to find its way around the world. You know, when you have flights going from Wuhan to China and Wuhan to Brussels and Wuhan to Rio de Janeiro, you can see that, you know, literally in a matter of hours, an infected person could move from China to all other parts of the world. And in no time, really, we began to have a global pandemic. So all of us need to remember that this whole thing started with the mistreatment of animals. And I want to draw your listeners' attention, Debbie, to a related zoonotic problem. And that is what we started talking about just a minute ago, you asked me about, which is mink farming in particular and COVID. Well, it turns out that no non-human animal is more susceptible to COVID than mink. These are small animals possessed with this beautiful coat that we take advantage of by putting them in factory farms. The average size of a U.S. mink factory farm is 10,000 mink in a farm, but some of them have 100,000 mink or even more at these farms. And we're not even one of the biggest producers in the world. The biggest is Denmark in Northern Europe. And then China is number two, which, again, that may have played a really important role, according to the World Health Organization, in transmitting the virus to people. And then Poland, the Netherlands are numbers three and four. And what happened in Denmark is that they had 1,150 mink farms, a small country, 5.5 million people, but they had 17 million mink, number one mink producer in the world, as I indicated. And mink workers, so the people who work at the mink farm, got infected by COVID. They began to, you know, handle the mink or be near the mink. They got infected. Mink, because they're kept in small cages, nose to nose, tail to tail, they got infected by the tens of thousands, and 350 mink farms became infected in Denmark. And with all of those hosts having the virus, that offers a greater potential for the virus to mutate. You know, we've heard a lot about the variants. Well, a variant is a mutation in the virus. And that virus mutated and the cluster 5 variant was the outcome. This became such a serious public health issue that Danish public health authorities thought that not only was this infecting Danes, and 1,000 to 4,000 Danes were infected with this particular mink variant, but that it could go global. We've heard of the UK variant. We've heard of the South Africa variant. We've heard of the Brazil variant. Well, this was the cluster 5 variant from Denmark. Only through dramatic containment efforts, inhibiting the travel and quarantining people, and then killing, sadly, all 17 million mink. They were destined to be killed later in the year, of course, because mink don't even live a year on these farms. They are raised and they're born and they grow, and at 10 months of age or so, they're killed and pelted, and the mink pelts are sold mainly to China. So this was a wake-up call to the global community, but it wasn't just peculiar to Denmark. The Netherlands had infections. Sweden had infections. Spain, Greece, Lithuania, Latvia. And Debbie, 20% of U.S.-based farms have been infected. This is the least known animal welfare crisis story in the United States. This is a brewing problem, and while the live wildlife markets may have launched the virus, the mink farms may extend the duration. They could incubate a new variant, make the vaccines less effective in addressing the crisis, and keep us stuck in a pandemic circumstance. So we at Animal Wellness Action and the Center for a Humane Economy are very, very much hoping that federal lawmakers and regulators at the U.S. Department of Agriculture and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention work with us to phase out these mink farms in very short order. If the mink farmers need to be compensated, I think that may be appropriate because we've compensated so many other businesses affected by COVID. But the key is we've got to stop this cycle of raising mink, killing them for their pelts. It is so dangerous. Debbie, these are wild, largely solitary, semi-aquatic animals. They're kept in cages, you know, with thousands of other mink. They are stressed. This is not normal for them. This is why, well, it's one reason why they're so susceptible to disease, because they're not in a good emotional space, because the whole environment that they're placed in, the overcrowding, the confines, no access to water, is so at odds with their normal, natural, instinctive behaviors. So that's a bit of a long discourse, Debbie, but I wanted to give your listeners a background on what's going on here.
It's so sad and heartbreaking, isn't it? It's no way for them to live. I mean, I look at it just like puppy mills and all them. You know, animals deserve so much better. You know, they need to live in comfort and freedom and just, you know, care and love, not just, you know, use it, but all this greed that's going on in the world. We got to look out for our animal friends and distress, you know, in need. And I've seen some photos of that and you know, even videos that I can't even stop. You know, I got to stop watching it because it's so mean and cruel how they do them, you know, so. Everyone, do your part and you know, take that action. And we need a lot of changes in this world. There's a lot of progress being made, but we still got a long road ahead, but we will reach its destination. Right, Wayne? All in good time. Just keep it up. Just keep up the advocates out there. Please do your part, you know, because there is tons of animal advocates out there. I mean, look at the Facebook pages and groups, how many there are, even on Twitter and Pinterest and LinkedIn. It's amazing. So can you imagine if we all went under one roof? I mean, it would be overcrowded with all the action takers. Right? Think about it. You know, millions millions. Wow.
You know, a few years ago, animal protection was rated the number one cause in the United States by number of donors and number of volunteers, bigger than any other cause. Now, in subsequent years, I think maybe breast cancer and some other causes might have overtaken it, but it is in the marrow of American culture that animal groups have been around for more than 150 years. They're part of our society, and we have anti-cruelty statutes that have been around even before the first animal protection group. So before there was any group to give us guidance on what laws should exist to forbid cruelty to animals, lawmakers passed statutes forbidding cruelty first in the early, in the 1830s, because there's something just instinctive and common sense about not being cruel to animals. And of course, many of the earliest campaigners for laws against cruelty were concerned about animals, but they were also concerned about how cruelty deadens the soul of people, that it crushes the humanity of the perpetrator, and that we as individuals who live in social environments, we live in communities, we live in neighborhoods, we are nations together on this one planet. This is antisocial behavior. If you don't have empathy for the fellow creatures on the planet, that's going to spill over into your interactions with people. And now we know that this is so well accepted in the sociological literature that animal cruelty is closely correlated with other forms of social violence and criminal activity. But this, Debbie, is part of our nation. All 50 states have anti-cruelty laws. I had worked to pass a federal law, a federal anti-cruelty law called the Preventing Animal Cruelty and Torture Act. I had worked with some of my colleagues to formulate that concept, and then it took us about 5 years to get it enacted into law. It became law in November of 2019. So now we have a federal law making animal cruelty a felony. We have all 50 states with felony-level penalties for malicious cruelty. We have anti-animal fighting laws at the federal level, making all animal fighting a federal felony as well. So this is really kind of who we are. You know, it used to be that people said, oh, the animal activists, they're radicals. I think the people who hurt animals are radicals. They're out of the mainstream.
Yes.
Being good to animals is part of, being good to animals is who we are. It's codified in the law. It's built into our traditions. It's an accepted set of moral values. So I am very, very much of the view that it's the animal exploiters who are the extremists.
Yeah, I mean, because, you know, the animals, they're innocent and everything. And it doesn't cost a dime to be kind to a human or animal at all, nothing. You know, so when they, you know, teach the children when they're young, to grow up, and you're going to love animals your whole life, and they deserve that because they're not one that, you know, bother anybody. They just want to live in their freedom and comfort and peace, you know, not just, you know, looking at the greed part of it. And these animals, you know, the minks, oh my goodness, we don't need minks for, you know, we got other ways of staying warm. It's not a necessity. And how many animals had, you know, went through pain and suffering to get that mink coat? I mean, it's unbelievable. You know, so
well,
everyone,
Debbie, think about it. Think about Denmark, a small country raising 17 million mink. China raising 15 million mink. Poland, 6 million. Netherlands, 4 million. I mean, when you add up all these countries, those countries and others that are involved in the industry, it's 50 million mink killed every year just for fur. Almost all of it's going to China because American consumers aren't buying mink anymore. European consumers aren't buying mink. It's mainly going to a small strata of high society in China and newly wealthy country with a very elite class of wealthy people who think of fur as a status symbol. Well, they haven't gotten the memo yet, and they haven't had the traditions that we've had in the United States of 150 years of animal welfare activism. You know, you mentioned how popular this is. We estimate that there are 35,000 animal welfare groups in the United States. 35,000 are in every community. They are shelters, they are rescue groups.
Wow.
Wildlife rehab centers. 35,000. Think about that. We have 3,100 counties in the United States. So you can think of 10 to 15 animal organizations in every county. And, you know, obviously some of these are very rural counties with not many people. So then, you know, you have them clustered in some of the counties, but this is really just part of our society. And really, Debbie, what we're about at Animal Wellness Action and the Center for Humane Economy and Animal Wellness Foundation and our other partner organizations is logically applying anti-cruelty principles to all of the settings in which people cause harm to animals. Cruelty to animals is not just about random acts, about doing something terrible like, you know, clubbing an animal or, you know, setting an animal on fire, just horrible things. I mean, god-awful things. But it's also about tuitions exhibiting cruelty to animals, confining a pig in a cage so small that she can't turn around for up to 3 years, or you know, tormenting a primate in a laboratory for some needless or duplicative experiment where the results of drug testing are not going to be predictive for the human response to the drug. To shoot an elephant, for the tusks when they're an endangered animal. These are acts of cruelty. Just because it's lawful doesn't mean it's not cruel. And just because some industries have had long time acceptance doesn't mean that their handling of animals and their treatment of animals is acceptable. So we are really trying to speak truth to power and to call out cruelty wherever we see it, whether it's a random act or an institutionalized form of cruelty. And there are so many things that we campaign on. We talked about the mink, but we've got a major campaign, Debbie, called Kangaroos Are Not Shoes. It's a campaign to stop the largest native wildlife slaughter in the world, the killing of 2 million kangaroos in their native habitats for their skins to make Nike soccer cleats or Adidas soccer cleats or Puma soccer cleats. This is unacceptable to kill these marsupials in their habitats where they have evolved to live in these habitats over more than 1 million years. They are part of the rural landscape in Australia. And these men go out at night with firearms and night vision goggles, and they may try to kill 30, 50, 75 kangaroos a night to amass a body count so they can sell the parts to the global trade for athletic shoes and to some degree a meat trade, but it's really the leather and the use in shoes that's driving this whole enterprise. There's nothing like it in the world. The second biggest slaughter is the killing of Canadian seals, harp seals, hooded seals off of Atlantic Canada. At its zenith, that was 300,000 baby seals shot and clubbed. That's gone down to about 20,000 because so many countries have forbidden import of these seal pelts, including the United States, also the European Union, Russia forbids it as well. So it was market-based campaigns to forbid the sale of these pelts that has really shut that down. But at its height, 300,000, this is 2 million kangaroos. And among those 2 million are 400,000 joeys. Those are the juveniles who are in the pouches of their mothers. These men shoot the mothers at night, and then they go and they see a joey in the pouch or at the foot. And then, according to the Australian Code of Conduct, they're supposed to bash their skull in. I mean, it's a bigger slaughter of infants than even the Canadian seal hunt. You know, I always called that a massacre, you know, in their seal nursery. well, this is compounding it. You kill the mother and then you kill the baby. Just an awful, miserable thing. But the government of Australia defends this, and the kangaroo killing industry defends it. They say, oh, well, we have so many kangaroos. We have too many kangaroos. Of course, that's what anybody says when they want to try to justify their exploitation. They try to attach some social benefit to their activity as if they're doing us a favor. Or in the worst case, they say they're doing the animals a favor. They're doing them a favor by killing them. I mean, that harkens back to the old language of what we're going to destroy the village to save the village in wartime. I mean, it's a travesty of an argument, I think. And we are campaigning hard. We have a whole dedicated website, Debbie, called kangaroosarenotshoes.org. And your listeners can go to that site and get involved. They can go to animalwellnessaction.org or centerforahumaneeconomy.org and sign our petition. Get involved. We have legislation in Congress, the Kangaroo Protection Act, by Representative Salud Carbajal of California, Brian Fitzpatrick of Pennsylvania, to ban the trade in the United States of kangaroo skin. So we're going to close our U.S. market to imports of these products. And that will be a very welcome day in my mind when we take that very humane action.
Oh, yes, definitely. And audience, please, you know, take note of all this. You can always go back and get the information on these archive shows. And spread the word, you know, human reaction to take action, you know, so please do your part and sign those petitions, make those phone calls. You know, it doesn't take that long. I do it myself. So, you know, whatever I have to do, whether it's, you know, write an email or make a phone call, sign a petition, I will do it or pass it on social media because I'm an admin on several groups and pages on there too. So I got ways of getting all this out, you know, but it takes teamwork. I can't do it all, you know, by myself. Just like these shows, I can sit there and can talk all we want to, but if we don't take action, we're just spinning our wheels. So everyone, please listen and do whatever you can to make it changes. I mean, this is so, hearing all this is so depressing and so heartbreaking for these animals. They don't deserve that. All animals deserve better. I mean, we got to be their voices, right, Wayne? It takes all of us, that teamwork. So
every person.
That's right. It takes a village, everyone. So, you know, keep spreading the word. I mean, there's a lot of people out there that's not aware of what's going on behind the scenes. You know, they get involved with their families and their jobs and everything, and their children or their sons and daughters or whatever the case may be, and they don't know what's going on behind the scenes. And if they did, I don't think they would like it, because I know I don't. You know, I know Wayne doesn't. He slept on the plate and doing what his part. But, you know, get the word out there. Tell them over the phone, gatherings, whatever you can do. Social media is a landing strip for all this stuff. So whatever it takes. And we got some wolves. The wolves, I got to have some more show on wolves there, Wayne, because they're important too. And they deserve to live freely, all of them. You know, I just seen on social media where Wisconsin, they killed over 200 wolves there. And it was so sad to hear that. It's like, why? You know, leave them alone. Leave these animals alone. Let them live in peace and comfort. That's where they're supposed to be, out in the wild. You know, but you want to go ahead and we'll be speaking about the wolves from the Great Lakes to the Northern Rockies. Go right ahead. We still got 20 minutes here.
Wolves are, of course, the forebears of the domesticated dogs who live with us. It's hard to believe that through selective breeding we could have Chihuahuas and Great Danes because they look so different. They're so many different sizes and shapes. But they all come from wolves. Wolves are pack animals. They are family animals, the alpha male and the alpha female, and they may have brothers and sisters and then their offspring. And they are a social unit. And they have an incredible ecological effect. I mean, through their predation, they maintain the balance in ecosystems. You have heard Yellowstone National Park research and researchers and others talk about the incredible ecosystem-wide impact and bringing balance. There is a very famous video about this, about how wolves make streams cleaner and clearer. And in Wisconsin, they had been listed as an endangered species under federal law. And the administration in 2020, the Trump administration, sought to remove federal protections for them and throw the management to the states, while many of the state fish and wildlife agencies are extreme pro trophy hunting, extreme pro trapping, Wisconsin being one of the worst, perhaps the worst in many ways. And right after they got off the endangered species list, they unleashed these hunters, and in 48 hours, maybe only 1,000 wolves in all of Wisconsin, they killed more than 25% of all of the wolves. They doubled the quota that was set. So they were supposed to kill, 115 or so, and they killed, probably about 230. I think they claimed 218, but that really is a low estimate, I think. And overnight, it killed 25% of the animals in the state, 25% of the wolves. Those are families. Those families are broken up. You can only imagine the wolves are grieving. Just like if you lose a dog in your home and he or she was close with another dog, they mourn and they grieve just like we do.
Yes.
Animals
yes.
have emotions like we do. And in many respects, because they're so family-oriented and so loyal, it's probably as intense or more intense than our own suffering and grieving. And what was especially outrageous, Debbie, was that nearly 90% of the animals were killed by hunters using packs of dogs. So they used dogs against the wolves. Wolves, who were the forebears of the domesticated dog, men used dogs to chase them down and have animal fighting situations. Wolves are pack animals. They stick together. The pack of dogs comes across a wolf or a set of wolves, and a fight ensues, and then the hunter shoots the animal. It was so ruthlessly efficient and barbaric. And I'll tell you, there's a disease called chronic wasting disease that has afflicted Wisconsin more than any other state, and deer get this disease. It's a brain-wasting disease, just like mad cow disease, or in humans, it's called Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease. You had cases in the United Kingdom a couple of decades ago that people ate meat from mad cows, and they contracted this and they died. Well, deer have gotten this probably by commingling with deer at cervid farms, where we raise deer for canned hunting facilities or for meat or for the velvet. Their antlers. And this is a circumstance where wolves, because they are so good at culling the sick and the weak and injured animals, where wolves are, there is no incidence of chronic wasting disease in Wisconsin. It's only where wolves do not live that chronic wasting disease spread. I don't know, Debbie, if that is clear to you and clear to your listeners, but wolves are cleaning out disease in prey populations and strengthening the entire ecosystem by eliminating disease in these animals. And that disease has cost the state of Wisconsin tens of millions of dollars in terms of containment efforts. It has disrupted what is a big deal in Wisconsin, which is the deer hunting season, which is very important to a lot of rural people in particular. And killing the wolves is actually hurting the deer population in its own way, because wolves were so efficient in controlling chronic wasting disease. But this treatment of these animals, they don't need to be hunted. They control their own numbers. They actually control the numbers of other animals. And they're apex predators. Scientists recognize the indispensable role that these animals have, yet there was this slaughter of wolves that occurred in Wisconsin during the breeding season. This happened just at the end of February. And I've written about it on my blog at animalwellnessaction.org. But that's just one state. Idaho, Montana, and a number of other states are just doing terrible things to these animals. And I'm sickened about it, but I'm not passive. We have to do something. We have to fight for it. That's why we are going to be suing the federal government to restore federal protections for wolves. And we hope that we are able to succeed in federal court and forestall any future trophy hunts of these animals.
Yeah, and best of luck. I mean, I hope, you know, that's one thing, you know, going for the changes, because there needs to be changes made from every angle out there, everyone. You know, there was, like I said, there was a lot of progress being made, but we can't give up. We have to keep going and fight for these animals' rights and their living conditions and how they're treated. Animal cruelty is animal cruelty. So when they are mistreated and living in, you know, pain and suffering and getting killed for, you know, they have families just like we do. They suffer just like we do. They just speak in another language. You know, they see, they smell, they eat, they hear, they walk, they sleep, they have feelings. I mean, they need to be treated better here on this earth. You know, we cannot ignore all these, a lot of these problems and look away. So, you know, do whatever you can to help out. And please spread the word, because once, I don't know, once these victories come in, Wayne, and if I'm a part of them or not, I want to jump to the ceiling and say, look at this. You know, we cannot say that we're spinning our wheels, because we're not. So, but I got a caller calling in there. Anybody wants to call in and have any questions or comments for Wayne, you are more than welcome to. Area code 310-982-4270. Press 1 in the queue to alert me that you want to speak to Wayne, okay? Because it is a pact, and if I don't get a signal, I'm not going to know. Go ahead and area code 719. You're live and on the air. Any questions or comments for Wayne, please? Go ahead.
Hi, Debbie. Hi, Wayne. This is Ray.
Hey. Hi, Mama Cat. How you doing?
Hi, Debbie. I'm doing well, thank you.
All right.
Hey,
thanks for calling.
You know, for years and years, we had no wolves up there. And then they reintroduced them. And as soon as the numbers started picking up, they went ahead and opened up the hunt. And I just, Colorado thing, they're opening up a wolf hunt. And I just don't understand it. First they were gone. So they reintroduce them. They breed them, reintroduce them, so that they can open up a hunting season and kill them again. I don't understand.
It's sad.
Well, you know, in some ways, there were different people involved, right? There were people who want to restore wolves to the native lands on which they lived for thousands, tens of thousands of years. So that was an attempt at restoration, to right a wrong that we had extirpated them and to bring them back into the ecosystem to which they belong. The problem is the powerful ranching interests and trophy hunting interests, when they get even more than a few animals, they want to kill them because they have this irrational fear of wolves. I mean, here are animals that are powerful for sure, but they stay away from people. They don't hurt people. There are no documented attacks in the lower 48 states in a century on a person from a healthy wolf. And they, as I said, you know, earlier in our discussion about wolves, they're a boon to the ecosystem. They're also a draw for tourists who would love to get a glimpse at them at Yellowstone, one of the biggest draws is wolf watching at Yellowstone National Park. Yet these ranchers and trophy hunters want to kill them because they want to brag about it, I think, because they fear somehow that some animal is also powerful. They want to show their dominance. And it is ignorant, and it is wrong. And, you know, again, I really want to say that we all have to think about the cattle industry. The cattle industry, especially when they graze cattle on our public lands, they kill the wolves, they kill the grizzly bears, they kill the coyotes. They just want that whole stage, you know, occupied essentially by cattle. They don't like the wild horses and the burros either. I mean, and then the cattle who are exotics, you know, are the ones who actually do damage to streams and other riparian areas. It really upsets me. And we are really urging people to rethink their dietary habits so that they can eat more plant-based and not support this livestock industry that is grazing on our public lands, that's setting up you know, the situation for killing of wolves and grizzly bears. It's all connected. It is absolutely connected.
Yeah, I agree. I got involved with the wild horses here because, you know, just exactly what you're talking about, the cattle. And they keep saying that the horses are doing so much damage. Look, those horses were here long before the cattle ever got here. And I didn't see fields decimated, creeks just disgusting, until the cattle ranchers were here. But for some reason, the cattle ranchers are winning out. You know, last year they killed so many horses and burros. It was just ridiculous.
Well, there may be, your name's Ray, right?
Yeah.
You're Ray? Yeah. Well, Ray, you know, maybe there are 100,000 wild horses and burros. That's probably an inflated number from the people who want to hurt them. But we have on those same public lands, on those same federal lands, our federal lands, we have 4.3 million livestock. So how is it that the horses, 100,000 of them at most, are eating so much forage when there are 4.3 million cattle and sheep? I mean, it doesn't compare. The same thing is happening in Australia. They've got 90 million cattle and sheep in Australia, and they're saying, well, the kangaroos, you know, are eating too much. I mean, it is selfishness. It's greed. It's treating the native wildlife like they're the invaders when it's really the cattlemen and the livestock who are invading the native lands of these wildlife species.
Well, and there's a group, the Western Governors Association, and they get together and I guess they get to decide what's an invasive species and what's not. And they actually added the cat to the top 50 most invasive species. I'm wondering why cattle isn't on there. They're not from here, you know, but we don't see that happening anytime soon.
And they're roaming all over our public lands, national forests, Bureau of Land Management lands. They're even on National Park Service lands. There's just a story about how the National Park Service in Northern California at Point Reyes National Seashore, well, they're going to maybe allow the killing of elk because they want to expand the grazing options for the cattle ranching on and around a National Park Service unit. It's incredible. It's absolutely incredible.
But, you know, if people don't start standing up, nothing's going to change because they group together, you know, and they get more and more power and they think they can do whatever they want, and they do, and they're slaughtering off all different species of animals. And, you know, we have to do something because, you know, like the wolves is a good example, and Yellowstone went to hell after they got the wolves out of there. And once they brought them back, like you said, the streams are crystal clear and the balance is back. And the sick, as much as I don't like seeing it, the sick, the weak animals are being taken care of. They're not laying in a field rotting, you know. And once they brought the wolves back, Yellowstone is a lot better. And I've been able to see those wolves up there, and they're absolutely stunning.
They really are. They really are. They really are. Well, thank you so much for your fighting for animals. It's great to know that you're part of this effort.
Sometimes it feels like, you know, we need more. We need more people.
Strength in numbers, Ray. That's what you always say.
That's a fact.
And it's so true. And then when she was a former guest on my show several times, Community Cats United, former, and she's out there multitasking too. So whatever, and appreciate it, Ray, what all you're doing. I call her Mama Cat because she feeds 125 cats in these colonies, and it's awesome.
Oh, my gosh.
That's why I call her Mama Cat.
Good for you.
Isn't that sweet?
Good for you. It's awesome.
And we have, you know, don't give up there, Ray, because you are doing so much out there. And like I said, what we allow is what will continue, everyone. So we have to speak out for this. I mean, a lot of these issues have rolled over from the 20th century onto the 21st, and now we're heading to the 22nd century. So we can all step up and do our part, you know, for the lives and futures of all animals and make it better. They deserve it so much. Don't give up.
Yes,
don't give in. You know,
sometimes
so,
it feels like we're spinning our wheels, but we got to keep spinning them.
That's right. I know how you feel there, Ray, you know, because I get in moods like that too, but I don't give up. I said, you know what, if I give up, I automatically lose, and I'm not going to do that. So whatever it takes. And when there's more of us, that teamwork means so much. And see those victories come through, and they do happen. And then we'll continue. I think COVID had a big, you know, part of it getting, you know, on the back burner last year. But we're now, you know, there's only so much we could do with COVID. And, you know, rest in peace to all the ones that passed away. But we just got to be careful because those masks don't block cancer or diabetes, heart disease, any of that. So we're all on this earth temporarily, and we got to make the best of it, everyone. You know, so they don't, you know, block car crashes or nothing like that. So just be careful, everyone out there, you know, because you never know when, you know, it could happen to us. And do with these animals, do your part. We're down to 2 minutes here. Mama Cat, thank you for calling in all your support. And a big shout out to my mother, Pat, a.k.a. Moose. You don't look like a moose, but they call another name for Mom. Love you, Mom, and thanks for listening in and all your support. And Wayne, this has been another great interview. And looking forward to having you back again. This is wonderful. Keep it up. This is so inspiring, you know, that what you're doing. And, you know, I'll be getting a hold of you out there and you know, the work you're doing is so inspiring. Never give up. Never give up hope. And you know who especially
thanks
you, Wayne, is the animals. Because they see their lives starting to change for the better in their futures. They just can't tell us. But when you see the happy pictures and the victory pictures, hey, it's all well worth it, everyone. It's so meaningful and powerful. I know I've been doing it for a long time, so I know. And I don't want to be turned into the other direction, change sides. But thank you, Wayne, for coming on again this evening. I'll be in touch with you to come back on. The more exposure, the better. You know, the radio platform is rocking the airways, and I love it. And thank you, Ray, for calling in Mama Cat. And I'll be, you know, we got to keep going. We cannot give up. You know, we get, you know, feeling down or something, but we can't give up, okay? And everybody out there, please don't give up. Know what's going on behind the scenes. And, Wayne, I give you a big standing ovation, okay? And Marty, give Marty Irby a big hug from me, too, because he's been on the show, and we're going to have him back on. It's great. So thank you, everyone, for tuning in. Next week will be our guest comeback, Christian Shane Dollery. He is the founder of the Greater Good Magazine and the Wild Society Founder Magazine. But we'll welcome him back. But thank you, everyone, for tuning in. And hope you join in next week, 7 o'clock Eastern, 6 o'clock Central, 5 o'clock Mountain, and 4 o'clock Pacific. Hey, may God bless you all. Paul in hand.
Thanks, Debbie. Thanks, Wayne.
United we stand against all animal cruelty and neglect of folks.